Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Elvis Costello emerged on the music scene as part of the punk new wave revolution that exploded during the mid-1970s. His backing band, The Attractions, was a big part of Costello's sound and his success. Bassist Bruce Thomas, drummer Pete Thomas, no relation, and keyboard player Steve Naive had the musical chops and the propulsive energy to provide the perfect accompaniment, no matter the genre, rock, soul, country, you name it. Bruce Thomas is the author of a memoir called Rough Notes, Dancing About Architecture. In the book, Bruce reminisces about working with Paul McCartney and touring on Elton John's private jet. And of course, he revisits his time as a member of The Attractions. Bruce told us how he answered an ad in the British musical magazine Melody Maker to audition for a bass player gig with an unidentified singer-songwriter. But he had a pretty good idea of just who it was.
The London music scene wasn't, like, huge. It was in the days of pub rock and all that kind of thing. Pretty much everybody knew what was going on the grapevine, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So when the advert came out, I had an idea. It was this guy, Elvis Costello, making a few waves.
Mm.
So I went out and bought the records he had out and learnt the songs and went and did the audition, pretending I was hearing the songs for the first time.
Ah, whereas you weren't. Yeah, very clever.
Very clever, eh?
Very clever indeed. And so then what happened? After you learned the songs, then what was the next step?
Well, I went to a rehearsal studio in South London.
Mm-hmm.
And met the artist concerned and played along.
Yeah. And what did you think of Elvis when you first met him?
I thought he was very sweaty. Elvis didn't want me in the band at all, but...
Why not?
Well, he didn't want me when I rang up for the audition because he thought I was too old school because I'd already been in bands, you see, and he was kind of going for something new, although Pete had already been on the circuit as much as I had.
Mm-hmm.
But when he asked who my favourite band was via the woman that answered the phone, I said Steely Dan, and I heard this voice at the other end saying, get rid of him, get rid of him. And the woman said, no, he sounds like he sounds okay. So anyway, I went along, and I still think he wasn't that keen, even though I did a good audition, but Pete Thomas basically insisted that I got the job because I was in a band called Quiver.
Right.
Yeah, right. And one of our biggest fans that came to all our... Whenever we played universities, there was this student, long-haired student, who used to come along and hang around in the dressing room, who was Pete Thomas. So he said, he's good, you've got to give him the job. So... more or less, the girl who answered the phone, I ended up marrying. So between the two of them, they pretty well sorted me out.
What was it like the first time when you played with Pete Thomas and Steve Naive on keyboards, who at that time was going by his real name of Steve Nason? What was that like?
Yeah, it clicked straight away.
Straight away.
It was pretty instant. I mean, we did a week's rehearse. I can't remember when exactly the first time we played together was, whether we even kind of had a dry run before we went off and started rehearsing with that lineup. I think we just, well, Jake Riviera, Elvis's manager, probably said, right, this is the band, go off and rehearse for a week, which we did. You know, he was usually quite critical or opinionated, and he came up bounding up after we'd done our first. No one came to the rehearsals. They all the people from Stiff Records office came down to the first show, and he came bounding up to offer his usual advice, and he just said, listen, lads, it's a world-class band.
Hmm. Yeah. The first Elvis Costello and the Attractions album was This Year's Model, which was released on March 17th, 1978. And it certainly sounded much different from Elvis's first album,
sure.
My Aim Is True, because you guys weren't on that album. What do you think the Attractions brought to Elvis's songs on This Year's Model, especially?
Well, funnily enough, when the Attractions first started out, if you listen to the early sets, we sounded not unlike the My Aim Is True lineup, which is Clover, as you probably know,
yes,
an American country rock band.
Allison, it's
then I don't know when it changed. I think it was during the rehearsal when we got the new material. It suddenly got a much harder, more modern edge to it. I think that was just, we just found our sound, you know.
Mm-hmm. You and drummer Pete Thomas were a really tight and really energetic rhythm section. How would you describe the chemistry between you and Pete?
Well, as I say, he was a big fan of mine, so there was no pulling in opposite directions. He'd do everything he could to, you know, to make it work. And likewise, because he's obviously a really good drummer.
Yeah.
But he was, I mean, we used to do 200 plus gigs a year, and he used to come and knock on my door at 3 a.m. sometimes in a hotel and say, I think we should go over so-and-so, you know, I think we could get that a bit tighter.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, yeah, I listen to some of it now and it is pretty tight. But I was told at quite an early stage in my career, when I first came to London when I was still a teenager, and I went round to John Mayall's house trying to get a job with the Blues Breakers, because when I got to London I tried to get jobs with everybody, like Jeff Beck and all sorts of people. And to their eternal credit, they all invited me in and gave me advice as well. They didn't say clear off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And John Mayall said, explain to me how you've got to, you know, you land on the one, on the root note when you play the blues, and you land on this and you do this with the bass drum and that. And I thought, right, you get that right first, you know, and then you can do the fancy stuff like James Jameson, or, you know, add a bit of melody like Paul McCartney, or go off on a flight of fancy like John Entwistle. But first of all, you've got to be ducked done playing Green Onions, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then everything else is a bonus.
Yeah. One of the standout songs on this year's model is Pump It Up, which features some very propulsive and frenetic bass work from you. How did you come up with the riffs for Pump It Up?
Well, in retrospect, a lot of the time the riffs didn't come from my fingers as much as from singing them, if you know what I mean.
Oh, really?
It's like you would sing along. I didn't realise I used to sing bass parts until I heard myself, you know, on an isolated mic doing it.
Oh, cool.
I used to often sing the parts as I was playing them, because it helps you get the phrasing right.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, I guess I was kind of half singing what the part should be. In retrospect, when I analysed it, it was actually a hybrid of a riff from an Everly Brothers song called The Price of Love, but with the notes changed to those of a Richard Hell and the Voidoids track called You've Got to Lose, and then there's a kind of an odd bar left where I played You Really Got Me.
Mm.
It's what I call organic sampling.
Organic sampling.
You know, there's nothing original, is there? I
mean, no.
But it's how you put things together in a different combination, which is original.
Sure, recycling riffs. And with so few riffs, you're being environmentally responsible.
No single-use riffs here.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'll use that.
Yeah, please
I'll
do.
Use that in another... Single-use riffs. It's
yeah.
a good one. You
yeah.
come up with a good one there.
Oh, thank you. The first four albums you recorded with Elvis were all produced by Nick Lowe, who is, of course, a bass player. Do you think that that's one of the reasons that your bass occupies so much bandwidth in the mixes?
I used to think back in the day that I was getting a raw deal. You know, I was thinking, oh, the bass could be a bit louder.
Mm.
So I listen back to them now. I think, crikey, they really push the bass front and center.
Yeah.
In quite a lot of the stuff, you know. But the thing is, it carries quite a lot of the songs as well.
Oh, very much so.
And I think the reason, my theory for that is that it's a bit like The Who. Pete Townshend is not known for his guitar solos like Eric Clapton or Peter Green or, you know, Jimmy Page or any, but he's primarily a rhythm player with a lead drummer and a lead bass player. And I think because there are never any guitar parts in the Attraction stuff, it was all, the guitar mainly chugged away, Lennon-esque style. And where certain embellishments were needed or a bit of structure or a line other than a keyboard line, I overplayed anyway, so I was quite happy to fill in. So I guess I filled the gaps in, and bass seemed to carry quite a lot of the song structure.
Yeah. Well, you, Pete, Thomas, Steve Naive, and Elvis were touring the U.S. after the release of the 1979 album Armed Forces. Elvis received some negative publicity for an incident that happened in a hotel bar in Columbus, Ohio. If I understand it right, it was Stephen Stills' band were also playing in town, and then Elvis was kind of drunk and kind of having this playful banter.
Well, we all were. Yeah. Everyone was.
Of course, yeah. And there was this playful banter with the soul singer Bonnie Bramlett and Elvis, and that became antagonistic, and Elvis wanted to offend because he wanted to get rid of them, so he criticized Buddy Holly, Elvis Presley, and then Ray Charles and James Brown and using racial slurs.
Yeah,
and so you were a witness. You were there when this happened, right?
I was there.
Yeah.
Crikey, yeah.
Did you think at the time it was going to be like a big big blow up in the media the way it did?
I just thought it was the sort of thing that went on all the time. I didn't think they'd go run into the press. But I think Rolling Stone was quite eager to accommodate them because they were championing Bruce Springsteen at the time.
Yeah.
And they probably saw a good way of getting rid of us.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And the band's next album was called Get Happy, and it featured 20 songs, which were very influenced by Stax and Motown, R&B, and soul. It was actually, that's the album that got me interested in R&B and soul. And in your book, you ask yourself the question, were we subconsciously referencing all that was best in popular music as some kind of penance?
It would have been subconscious if it was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't conscious. And some of the language used is very emotionally loaded and taboo now, and it certainly wasn't that much at the time, and not so much in England as it was in America, for instance.
Besides the fact that you were performing songs that were very bass-driven, was there something else going on that allowed you to show your great bass skills on Get Happy?
Well, that's my album. Steve Naive hated it.
Hmm.
You know, he absolutely hated playing on that because there was nothing for him to do. Conversely, when we went and did the country album, he was in his element doing all his trills and twiddles on the piano. And I might have been a horse with a wooden leg, which is pretty much what all country bass parts sound like.
Right.
Clip, clop, clip, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And it was the right album at the right time because I grew up on all that stuff, on Stax and Motown and R&B. That's my favourite genre. I mean, R&B as it was known, you know, not what they call R&B now.
Yeah. One of the many highlights of Get Happy is a cover of the Sam and Dave song, I Can't Stand Up for Falling Down. And the big difference is in the tempo. Whose idea was it to speed it up so much from the original, which has a very slow tempo?
I think that was it was either Elvis or Nick, because I remember when I heard the original version being mooted as a song for the album, I said, well, why are we recording the 16th best song that Sam and Dave ever did? So I obviously didn't think much of it at the time. With the tempo changes, you know, the end choruses reference I Can't Turn You Loose, Otis Redding. So.
Yes. What are your favorite bass riffs on Get Happy? That's a tough question, I imagine, because there's so many great ones.
I'd have to sit with a track list in front of me, but I know people like Five Gears in Reverse and Opportunity. I like my raga on the end of Riot Act. Mm-hmm. which is nothing to do with that, you know, as they say on Spinal Tap, don't go raga.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but yeah. I'll go raga at any opportunity.
Yeah. Elvis Costello first split from you, Pete and Steve, the Attractions, in 1987. Why?
Oh, I mean, this is why it takes a chapter to go into in the book, I guess. I think he was doing a Meghan and Harry. You know,
yeah.
He wanted to change. I think Elvis always had the long game in mind from day one, from the time that he did My Funny Valentine as a solo single only a few weeks after we formed. I think he was playing the long game, and once he started getting into string quartets and all these other things, then it was fairly obvious it was going to end up with a Nigerian nose flute ensemble at some point.
We'll look forward to that. It was so great to talk to you. Thank you very much, Bruce Thomas.
Well, thank you. Great pleasure.
Bruce Thomas is the author of Rough Notes, Dancing About Architecture. He's best known as a member of the Attractions, Elvis Costello's former backing band. Find out all about that bass, Meghan Trainor style.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble.
At WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Mark Harris, Zachary Drucker, and Bruce Thomas. If you want to hear it again, Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Just search for WPR and Beta. Here at Beta, we pride ourselves on our re-listenability. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Special thanks to producer Brad Kohlberg.
I don't know who that is, and I don't care to find out.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Don't just sit there sweating like a gigantic cheese. Do something!
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
And when I get back from lunch, you people had better be hard at work.
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. I'm Doug Gordon.
If that's a veiled criticism about me, I won't hear it and I won't respond to it.